joined on the Green again this week by contributor Larry Nagengast as he continues to cover Governor John Carney's push for his Wilmington Learning Collaborative to try to boost schools in the city of Wilmington. We've talked about the plan. We've talked about the reaction to the plan. And this week, Larry takes a look at an initiative in Springfield, Massachusetts that the governor continues to cite as a model for the Wilmington Learning Collaborative. Larry taking a look at what that initiative in Springfield looks like and how it could inform what we'll see in Wilmington if the governor gets his collaborative off the ground. Larry, we appreciate taking time to join us on the Green again this week.
Yeah, glad to be here, Tom.
So what is the Springfield Empowerment Zone and how long has it been in place?
The Springfield Empowerment Zone is a partnership that was created in 2014 to accelerate student achievement in the most underperforming middle schools in this city of about 150,000 people in western Massachusetts. The Springfield School District, its teachers union, and the Massachusetts Department of Education are partners in the project. The zone began operations in 7 schools in the fall of 2015. And it now includes 15 schools, including 4 high schools, serving about 5,300 students. The schools are officially part of the Springfield School District, but they have a separate governing board and administrative staff, and teachers play a key role in setting goals and deciding how their school will operate. And a couple of years back, Governor Carney and a couple of members of his team went up to Springfield and looked around, saw the project, and obviously they've come back and they liked what they saw.
In your piece, you call it more a model than a match when compared to Governor Carney's Wilmington Learning Collaborative. What are the key similarities and differences? And let's start with these similarities.
Well, the governor's plan calls for a governing board that would include representatives from participating school districts, which are expected to be Brandywine, Christina, and Red Clay, plus community leaders. And it would have a small administrative staff. Contracts among the school districts, their teachers union, and the state, either the governor's office or the Department of Education or both, would spell out the details of the arrangement. And teachers would have a significant role in decision making. And those are the key similarities.
And how about the differences?
Well, the two differences immediately come to mind. First, the Springfield partnership involves only one school district, while the governor's Wilmington proposal would include 3, as I said, Brandywine, Christina, and Red Clay. And according to experts who are familiar with partnerships like this, working with multiple districts could make the arrangement more complex. But there are also several examples of 3-district partnerships that are working effectively. The second difference, and we're really not sure how this is going to play out, is that the governor would like to see a consistent curriculum developed for all Wilmington schools. In Springfield, the board that runs the partnership sets overall learning goals, but teacher teams and principals at each school decide the curriculum. In essence, the schools have a great deal of flexibility in how they teach, as long as students make good progress toward meeting the goals set by the partnership board. So the difference here then is that Wilmington seems to be striving for more consistency, and in Springfield, the idea is that the board sets the big goals, the targets, and leaves it up to the individual schools to decide exactly how they're going to reach those goals.
You've mentioned teachers a couple of times here already, and one of the key constituencies that needs to buy in is teachers. How did the Springfield Empowerment Zone approach teachers' role in this plan, and is there a sense if it's working there?
Well, yes, there is a sense that it's working. Let me explain this. The structure at the Empowerment Zone schools includes what's called a teacher leadership team, which is elected by the teachers. And this team spends several months each year working with the principal to create what's known as a school operations plan. Now, while they're writing the plan, members of the leadership team report back to teachers at the same grade level or who teach the same subject. So every everyone gets a chance to participate and give feedback. And in addition to that, the schools also use comments from students and surveys of parents to guide them as the plan is written for the following year. All of these features help to build consensus and to create a positive school culture. Now, I can give you two very quick measurements of success. First of all, teacher turnover has declined significantly in the empowerment zone. Some schools have little or no turnover at all. And also, the last time that the teachers negotiated a new contract, 97% of the teachers voted in favor of it.
So looking at how Springfield rolled out its plan, did they have to make any adjustments after that initial rollout? Did they have to kind of pivot a little bit to make things work?
Well, yes, certainly. And, you know, that's something that you would expect whenever you're developing a new plan, and things don't always work out in reality the way you've got them put down on paper. So now, first of all, there were originally seven schools that started with the empowerment zone at Springfield, and only two or three of the principals from those seven schools are still in their jobs. It's a tough job. There are exacting standards, and there's a need to forge collaborative relationships. And that can be a challenge for principals who are accustomed to the traditional top-down management that you see in district schools. So some of those principals left on their own, and others were replaced. Now, also, the empowerment zone has grown from seven schools to 15, and now includes four high schools. In addition to adding high school grade levels, some of those original middle schools were split into two or three separate units because officials thought the smaller sizes would make the schools more manageable. Now, the empowerment zone leadership has taken different approaches to these reorganizations. In a few cases, they've reworked all of the grade levels at once, turning around a whole school that's grade 6 through 8. And in others, they've chosen to phase it in 1 year at a time. And that's a process that I'm told helps them learn from their mistakes and to make sure that they've got things right before they move on to reworking what the program is at the next grade level.
So how are they measuring success in Springfield, and what are the initial results they're seeing?
Well, the empowerment zone leaders say that school performance is generally improving, but again, only three of the seven original schools have advanced out of the bottom level of the state's performance rating system. And that was the reason why this empowerment zone got started in the first place, because these were considered essentially failing schools. Now, the focus now is more on how well students are doing in meeting the partnership board's goals. And they say that those metrics are encouraging. In other words, the concern is much more with the standards that are being set locally and whether they're being met, and less on the standards, the numbers that are generated through statewide assessments.
I was struck by the comment in your piece from Matt Brunel, the co-executive director of the Empowerment Zone in Springfield, about how tough the process was to get off the ground. Is that a cautionary tale for Governor Carney and his administration, which has been trying to move this thing along pretty quickly?
Well, I don't think the Carney administration has read my story yet, but the governor does appear to be taking this advice before checking out Delaware Public Media. You know, in his letter to school boards last week, the governor said he is willing to defer the launch of his plan until the 2023-2024 school year rather than starting it this fall. Now, given what I've heard from Springfield and the logistical complexities of working out details with three school districts and three teachers' unions, and that's before they get down to the nitty-gritty of what will be going on in the classrooms, it makes a great deal of sense to allow for a full year of planning.
So having talked to the people in Springfield about their experience and having covered efforts here in Delaware to affect school change over the years, do you see this model working here? Is it a good fit compared to what has been proposed here previously?
Well, we're really talking about two different things here, two steps. First, negotiating the memorandums of agreement that would be needed to put the collaborative in place, and then seeing how it works once it's up and running. Now, you'll recall that in 2017 and 2018, it took the governor more than 6 months to negotiate a plan to reorganize the Christina School District's buildings in Wilmington. And if it took 6 months to negotiate a plan with one district, it might very well take longer to negotiate a plan with three. On the other hand, maybe the lessons learned from that experience with Christina a couple of years ago will make this round of negotiations easier. Now, as for how it looks when it's up and running, I really wish we had a better feel for how that Christina restructuring is going. You know, Christina had about 6 months of operations before the pandemic hit. You know, so learning for the past 2 years in that district or anywhere in the state has been really anything but normal. And so I say this because the governor's plan, in some respects, and not in all, but in some respects, is a larger version of what's being tried in Christina, with more schools, more teacher involvement, and a more formal governance structure. So, you know, Christina might be a decent way of setting a ground for comparison, but you know the information just isn't there yet because things have been so messed up for the last couple of years. I mean, those issues aside, Governor Carney has consistently said that we can't wait any longer to improve education conditions and standards for children attending public schools in Wilmington. Few would disagree with this position. Implementing this plan will require overcoming administrative and operational challenges, but comparable models have been tried elsewhere. So, you know, will it work? I don't know, but it's certainly worth a try.
And with any significant school reform, expectations are typically high. What should Wilmington parents, who we I think should talk about here a little bit too, expect if this collaborative is actually put into operation?
Well, paradoxically, I would say expect a lot, but at the same time, don't expect too much. I mean, a lot is the sense that this plan, if it's implemented well, will bring better school leadership, teachers with a stronger commitment to the city, and schools with safer and happier environments. You can expect these things from what I've been told about Springfield. You know, you get it going well, that's what you're going to see. But don't expect too much right now in terms of student achievement, certainly not at the start. I mean, after all, it took decades for Wilmington schools to slide to this point. It's not going to turn itself around in a year or even 2 years. We may be talking about 5 or 6 years before this new culture that I've referred to is firmly embedded in the schools. And it's probably going to take that long before we've got a firm culture established, and that will enable the consistent improvements in student achievement.
Larry Nangest, as always, we appreciate your time. We appreciate your reporting, especially on this particular story. Thanks for being with us.
You're quite welcome, Tom.